Welcome everybody to this 9-day meditation retreat. This is obviously just the beginning, a little bit of meditation just for 10-20 minutes to calm people down, even me rushing around, many problems. But now is the time to let go of all the past and actually to be on retreat. Retreat means letting go of the world, just like you are renouncing the world, ordaining, in other words, just leaving the world just for a few days, for 9 days. So hopefully that you can please turn off all your mobile phones throughout the whole retreat. I know that sometimes many people feel that they are so important that they need to check their emails. Please understand that you're not that important. Other people have worries. What happens if I don't check all these things? The world will end. There'll be so many problems. Try it out not to check things, and you will find nothing really goes wrong. It is okay to leave the world for 9 days, which for many people means disconnecting. So please, I know in some retreats people have to hand in their mobile phones, their spare mobile phones, their secret mobile phones, their tablets and anything else they try and sneak into the retreat center, simply because we are so attached to other people, when really we don't need to be. Only 10 years ago, you could come on a retreat and it didn't really matter, you couldn't connect. It took a lot of searching to find a place like this, where the signals were very, very, very difficult to get, so that you couldn't really connect on your mobile phones. But now the word has gone around where the hotspots are in this place, so that if you really, really, really need to, you can see people walking up to the gate where you get a good signal, or deeper into the forest where you can get good signals. But please, don't waste this opportunity. Just test it out. To let go of connecting with all of your relations and loved ones and other people. Because you've done that before. You checked in on everybody and it's not that important. They can do without you. So see if you can disconnect. To connect with yourself, with this moment, with real life. This is your time, for you. And then you will find, little by little, the world will fade away. I became a monk 42 and a bit years ago. And in those jungles, it wasn't just we had no mobile phones, they hadn't been invented yet, there was even no phones at all. And there was no newspapers, there was no radio, there was nothing. And it did get to the point where, honestly, it's absolutely true, I didn't know what year it was, I didn't know what day it was. So someone actually came along and said, it's 1976. I said, are you sure? I thought it was only 1975. What happened? So, and that was a beautiful, peaceful time where we could just disengage for one of the things which causes us lots of stress in life, worrying about other people. So here, don't worry about other people. This is time for yourself. Sometimes we think that compassion and caring and duties is all for other people. And I told a story a long time ago. And it's a great story. I keep reminding myself of this because sometimes, as I say, I get incredibly busy. People just load work on me and problems and things don't go right. So, you know, it's uncomfortable even holding this microphone, so trying to get a proper lapel mic for tomorrow. Or just, we have a wonderful one over in Bodhinyana Monastery, just goes around your neck, very comfortable. But all these things which happen, we learn how to just let go of those things and to be irresponsible. So my simile of being irresponsible, I saw many of you come in this evening, think, oh, a nice peaceful retreat center, nothing to do, you got your rooms, you got your en suites with nice hot water. I haven't got any hot water. I don't know why, but I get one of the monks to fix it up tomorrow. So nothing to worry about, nothing to do, and you enjoy this place. But for others, it's like Bianca, making sure you're all settled in, that everything is okay for you. It's a lot of work for them. The same with our caretaker, Christina, a lot of work for them. But it could be a lot of work for me, but I learned how to make a difference by imagining I'm a visitor and not an owner. Because this was what occurred many years ago, that when I was again working very hard, as many duties and responsibilities I have, working 7 days a week, 50 weeks a year. I do have 2 weeks retreat in my own cave. But during those times, people would come and visit Bodhinyana Monastery. And they say, what a peaceful, calm, serene place this is. And I'd say, you must be joking. Today is Thai New Year Day. So many people coming at lunchtime, bothering me, wanting blessings and stuff. There's so many other things which people have been ringing up about our nuns' monastery in England, about Ajahn Brahmadi's just returned and talking about just how we're going to get these new kutis done. There's so much stuff to be done. And I say, you call Bodhinyana peaceful? It's my work camp. It's my office. It's my factory. And on the weekend, when I go into Nolamara Temple, that's even worse. More people, more work to be done. And when I go overseas, is it for holiday? No way. More work to be done, more people to look after. So it was getting to the point when people would come and visit, like you're visiting here, say, oh, how peaceful is Jhana Grove. How serene is Bodhinyana Monastery. And I say, maybe for you, but not for me. And I realized there was something very wrong there. And I decided, when I was contemplating this, to pretend to be you. To pretend to be a visitor, not an owner. So I tried practicing every Monday morning, coming back to Bodhinyana Monastery and pretending to be a visitor, not an abbot, not in charge. If any of the monks were going crazy, not my business. I'm not an abbot this morning. If anyone had a very important question on meditation, I'm sorry. I'm not a meditation today teacher this morning. In the afternoon I am, but not this morning. If any contractor came in and they wanted to wonder whether they're going to fix the plumbing here or put electricity on there, I say, sorry, not today. I don't own this place. I'm only a visitor. And as soon as I became a visitor, not an owner, as soon as I could have no responsibility, then I too could enjoy the serenity and peace at Bodhinyana Monastery. And if one of the lay people would come in and say, I want to speak to Ajahn Brahm, I would say, he's not here today. I wasn't really lying, because you all know Anatta, there's no one here anyway. so I can get away and say to them, I'm not here today. Actually, I'm not here any day. But by taking that responsibility away and being a visitor, not an owner, then I could relax and enjoy the peace of the monastery in which I live, just as you do. And so, here, please, you are visitors for 9 days. You are not owners. So you have no responsibility. And extend that, then you can enjoy the peace of this place. And also, you're a visitor to your bodies. You don't own it. Because if you think you have responsibility for your body, you always have to worry about it. Is it healthy? Is it sick? It's just like if you own a monastery, you always have to look after it and keep it clean and worry about it. But if you realize you're only visiting, and that's very true, you only visit this body for 60, 70, 80, 90 years, you're only a visitor. You don't own it. And that changes the whole ball game. It means you can be at peace with this body instead of worrying about it. And lastly, your mind. If you think you own your mind, then you'll have so many responsibilities, so many problems, so many broken parts in your mind you have to fix. So many parts of your mind you have to develop. So many dirty parts you have to clean. But if you don't own it, you don't have to clean it. Wow! I can now have some peace inside. So this was the simile which I developed about learning how to be a visitor and not an owner. Which means it made it so much easier to let go, not to worry, not to have any responsibilities, and just to not to make problems when they weren't really necessary. And so often in life, I have noticed that what you think is a problem, and you try and fix it up, it usually makes it worse. You leave it alone, and it tends to fix up all by itself. Just a couple of days ago, when I was going through some of the papers in a little book of interesting cuttings from newspapers, I came across the article again wherein doctors in Jerusalem a few years ago went on strike. They kept the emergency services going, but anything else other than dire emergencies, they didn't work at all for 2 weeks. And during those 2 weeks, the death rate plummeted. Hardly anybody died when the doctors weren't working. What is going on there? So sometimes, it was an example which I can feel, I know, that sometimes if you just let things be, instead of trying to fix them, they tend to become peaceful and healthy all by themselves. Sometimes, that's the same with your mind. Always trying to fix it up. Always trying to intervene. Always trying to heal the problems in the mind. Instead of just let them go. Be a visitor, not an owner to your mind. And then, it's not my problem. That's one of the mantras which I use for my meditation. None of my business. I like that mantra. None of my business. So, you come during the interviews and ask me about your relationship problems. None of my business. You ask me about your meditation problems, not my business. You ask me about your health problems, none of my business. It's amazing, you can just let go then. None of my business, not my business, is it my business? But anyway, what comes up in your own mind? especially all of your memories, your past. I don't know what's happened to you today, yesterday, last week, last year, this life, previous lives. None of my business. Isn't it wonderful? You may have some trauma from the past, and you can say to it, none of my business. I don't own this, it's not me. That is called letting go. So it's one of the mantras. So things come up in my mind, something happened in the past, none of my business. That was Ajahn Brahm 10 years ago business. It's not Ajahn Brahm now business. So if you can say that to yourself, none of my business, it's another way of letting go. It's again being a visitor. When I pretend to be a visitor, the monks are going crazy, none of my business, look after yourselves. I deserve a morning of irresponsibility. You deserve 9 days of irresponsibility. No duties at all. No burdens, no responsibilities, no family, no work, no anything. Isn't that wonderful? It's called a taste of freedom when you can learn how to let go. And as for your future too, that's none of your business. That's someone tomorrow's business, but not your business. So imagine you have no business at all. That's what being on retreat means. People say they want to get away from it all. What are you trying to get away from? What you're really trying to get away from, what you should be trying to get away from, is all the busyness and the stress and the problems of your life. And if you try to fix the problems, do they ever get fixed? Or you fix one problem, and there's two more come afterwards. That is life. So the only real way to actually to transcend problems is not fixing them, but not owning them. None of my business. So don't try and fix your meditation. Don't try and fix your mind. Don't even try and fix your body. Let it go. Let go of the fiction, the myth, the delusion of ownership. And with it, the business which arises from responsibility. You were taught to be responsible as a kid, and you're afraid of what might happen if you are irresponsible. That fear should actually be checked. Let go. See what happens. Just be without owning anything. Now, many of you may have come on this retreat trying to get something. You may have your goals, what you want to achieve. Just like when I did my first meditation retreat, I had a certain number of hours. I decided I'm going to sit so many hours every day. And I thought, because this is what I was taught and conditioned, have goals. And I achieved my goal. I sat so many hours a day. And what did it give to me? Nothing. Only aching knees, aching bum and aching back. I was so stupid. The goal should not be how many hours you can meditate. As my teacher Ajahn Chah would often say, if meditating many long hours without moving was a cause for enlightenment, if that's all you really need to do, just to sit and sit and sit and sit and sit and sit for hours, then he said, all the chickens in the world will be enlightened by now, because they sit for hours and hours and hours without moving, and they don't have zafus, they have these round eggs to sit on. They must have very sore bums, chickens. You should have compassion for them when you're sitting on the eggs. Would you like to sit on something so uncomfortable for such a long time? But it's not just the goal of how many hours. It's not even the goal of how peaceful you can become, because that too is counterproductive. Having goals is like being back at work with productivity bonuses. This is the time of year when I am very, very concerned about my productivity bonus. Because last August, we had a census in Australia. And any time now, any day now, the results are going to come out. How many Buddhists are there in Australia? And if the number goes down, the Buddhist Society of Western Australia Committee will give me the sack. My sales have gone down. And if they increase, I'm like, will you get a productivity bonus, Ananda, from the BSW committee for increasing the number of Buddhists in Australia? Should do. But of course, I'm only joking there. That's nothing to do with what a monk is all about. We have this idea of no goals, nothing to aim for. Because every goal, every aim, every target just takes you out of this present moment into some future place where you imagine you've reached your target. So imagine you have no targets, no goals, nothing to achieve, nothing to get, nowhere to go to. Then what happens? Then at last you can be here, relaxing and resting in this moment, because you've got no place to go, no goal to achieve, nothing to reach. You're just here, content with where you are, because that's the only place you've got. So many people spend their lives going places. I try to go places, but then you always end up where you started off. So it's a total waste of time. So don't try and get anywhere with your meditation. Instead, be here. So my master Ajahn Chah would often drum into me again and again and again, you meditate to let go, not to get things. You meditate to see how many things you can lose, not how many things you can gain. To be less attached, materially, spiritually. See how free you can be, because all the goals, all the trying to get somewhere, that is what causes the suffering. In brief, the very first teachings of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths, in particular, the second and the third, there you find the best teachings on meditation ever given. What I call the two types of meditation. The two types of meditation are what we call Second Noble Truth Meditation and Third Noble Truth Meditation. I'm saying this at the very beginning, even though some of you have heard it before, because this is so important and explains why some people are peaceful and happy and smiling, while other people are miserable and frustrated. The two types of meditation based on the fundamental teachings of our Buddha. Second Noble Truth, wanting is a cause of suffering. So, if your meditation is not happy, if you're frustrated, if you are suffering and having a hard time, then it must be you've done Second Noble Truth meditation. If your frustration, your disappointment is nothing to do with your ability or lack of ability, it is because you wanted something. You craved. You desired. That is a cause of suffering. So every time you have a difficult meditation, please remember, you've just done Second Noble Truth meditation. You wanted. You craved. Even for good things. So instead, our great Buddha, the great teacher, said, Third Noble Truth, letting go of wanting, renouncing, kindness, letting things be, that is the cause of the highest happiness, otherwise called Nibbana. So, if your meditation is happy, if you are having a good time, if joy comes up in the meditation, why? It's because you've been doing Third Noble Truth meditation. You have been letting go. That is the trick, the skill of meditation. Following the instructions. The clearest instructions, the basic instructions, coming from the very first teaching of the Buddha. Let go, really letting go, no craving, no wanting, happy to be here no matter what this place is, and then you're at peace. And the peace gets stronger and stronger, happier and happier. You want things, try to achieve things, trying to get somewhere. That is called Second Noble Truth meditation. It just causes you more frustration and disappointment. You're just doing exactly the same as you do in the world. Work hard, try to pay off the bills, try and get this done, try and get that done. That is so worldly. This is totally different. We don't try and attain things or get things. This is not materialism, not spiritual materialism. This is the opposite. Letting go, being content, and realizing you're already happy when you stop wanting something more. That's the other beautiful saying of the... It's the Four Noble Truths, all tied up in the saying which I heard many, many years ago, I can't remember from whom. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. So what do you want? If you get it, are you satisfied? Or does it just you want something more again? That wanting always leads to more desire. But being happy to be here, just letting things be, being compassionate, which is opening the door of your heart to this moment, or what we call these days, unconditional mindfulness. Just being aware with no strings attached of what you're aware of. You might be aware of your sleepiness. Don't try and change it. Otherwise it's not unconditional mindfulness. It's just another form of wanting. If your mind is restless, let it be. Then the restlessness will stop. Everything you do, if you possibly can, should just be aware, just knowing, and not doing anything about it. Life is here to teach you. We learn from things. We don't control them. That is called Third Noble Truth meditation. It is a trick. Sometimes, I'm sure I'll do this during the retreat, sometimes I encourage people just to use some imagination. At the beginning of your meditation, just imagine, with your eyes closed, you're the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. fully enlightened. Nothing more to do. What's done has been done. The burden has been put down. No more business. Don't have to attain anything more. You got the very highest. Nothing more to do in your life. Because I imagine, because where I got this from, when I was in Singapore many years ago, actually not about 2 or 3 years ago, there was one fellow who had started a Buddhist kindergarten, and they wanted me to come along. There was a Buddhist kindergarten, they wanted to sort of have some Buddhist monks there, so they put me in charge of about 43 or 4 year olds. To entertain. And what do I know about? It's hard enough to teach adults, but you're much easier than 3 or 4 year olds. My goodness, what can we do? Because it's a waste of time teaching them how to meditate. It's a waste of time teaching them 4 noble truths. Only 3 or 4 year olds. So my goodness, what can we do? So, I remember when I was really young, visualization, imagining. So because it was Waisak Day, pretty close to Waisak Day, I said, okay, now you're going to be the Buddha being born. Take 7 steps. They all took 7 steps and put your finger up and say, I am the best. They could do that very easily, especially one finger up, I am the best. Play acting. They were good at that. And then they say, now you're the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree. And they also cross their legs and put their... They've seen their mum and dad do that. And kids are great with their imagination. I remember when I was a kid, be a tree... swaying in the wind. I remember that very clearly, even though it's so many years ago. Imagination is brilliant, so why can't we use that as grown up? Oh, the last one, about just imagining that you are the Buddha just dying under the twin sala trees, the Parinibbana. So they all lay down, had to be on the right side. Half of them fell asleep. They liked that one, it was very easy. But that was good fun. They were into imagination, so why can't we use that? So you sit down, you imagine you're a Buddha. You don't have to get anything anymore. You don't have to try. You're already there. And just that idea of you don't have to improve anymore, get anything, is a marvelous, skillful technique. And people go and then, wow, they just have a taste of peace. And hopefully they get the connection. When you think you're imperfect, when you think you are imperfect and need something more, that's called suffering. When you just, none of my business, I'm only a visitor, I don't own this body of mine, but nothing to do, then you can let go and find how easy it is to be peaceful. But meditation is not difficult when you don't want anything. If you want to be enlightened, woo-hoo-hoo, you're going to suffer, 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 suffer. If you want to be peaceful, oh, you're going to get so tense. But if you let go of all wanting and just be, at least spend some time there, just being, not going anywhere, not attaining anything, because say all of that stuff, all that wanting, it's all about the future. Imagine if you really are in the present moment. People talk about that a lot, but really in the present moment. How can you want anything? To have a desire, a craving, a wanting, you have to have some perception of the future. So when there's no future, you just can't want anything. You're here. It's already arrived. And all ill will, complaining, fault-finding, anger, negativity, that's all about the past. You're just in this moment, that's all you really have. What is there to attain? What is there to complain about? It's already here. So this is how you find gorgeous peace. Problem is, though, once you become peaceful, you've got nothing to think about. And for many people, that's scary. Weird people, if there's nothing you have to think about, then you'll make something to think about. You'll start writing your autobiography. Planning it out. You'll start getting into fantasies about what would happen
if, you know, you you won the lottery and became a billionaire, you start imagining all sorts of stuff. Or you just go up to the gate and turn on your mobile phone to see what's happening. Why do you do that? Because you're scared of peacefulness. That's why people do stuff. They're not used to nothing happening. So sometimes, not being on your mobile phone for more than a day, can you do that? A lot of times you think, oh, it's not that there's some business to be attended to, it's just you are out of your usual way of doing things, your usual comfort zone. You know, I often use the same example, it's just so similar to a prisoner. You're in the prison of the internet, of mobile communications. You're a prisoner of that. And now I'm giving the opportunity to be free for a few days. No, I'd rather be in the prison. Someone about to be released usually doesn't want to be released. They'd rather be in the suffering of the known than in the freedom of the unknown. It's just called attachment. So this is why it is my job over the next few days to brainwash you, trick you, use every trick in a meditation teacher's book to try and get you out of jail just for a few minutes. So you can feel what it's like to have nothing to do, nothing to know where to go, nothing to attain, and just check it out, how free and peaceful it actually is. And be there long enough, because peace needs to have time to really develop and grow strong, to really manifest its incredible power. Peace upon peace upon peace upon peace. It doesn't stay the same. It builds in its power. And the power of stillness becomes immense if you're patient enough to do nothing long enough to allow it to appear. Too often, we lack that patience. We're always waiting for something to happen, rather than just being here. The two different types of patience. Waiting on the moment, like a waiter, always in the present moment, seeing what the customers need, or waiting for something to happen, which is waiting in the future. So we learn how just to be here, and allowing peace to build and build and build. It's something which I will talk about later on, when you really start getting into what mindfulness means, and how what most people teach as mindfulness is just so superficial, so weak. But when you start to get into stillness, that mindfulness grows and grows and grows. It becomes powerful, amazing, blissful, more happiness than you've ever known before. That's what happens when you do nothing. You get everything. When you try to get things, you get nothing except frustration. So, this is a trick of meditation, learning how to be a visitor. Just to be here, not going anywhere. And that way, peace upon peace upon peace builds up. And everything you aim for, with all your will and striving and planning, all those things you thought these things would get you, and you never got there yet, you find everything just comes to you. When you run after things, those things run away from you. When you just sit down still, they come straight towards you. Many years ago, one of our Anagarikas wanted to find an emu in the forest. There were many emus around, but as soon as he saw one and walked towards it, it would always run away. The emus were scared of humans, but one day he decided to sit perfectly still in the forest. Sat still, 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 and an emu came to him. Never seen a still human being before. So the emu became fascinated and went right up to him and sniffed him, nose to nose. It's a wonderful experience. There's so much teaching in that. You try and find an emu, they run away. You sit perfectly still, and the emu becomes fascinated. Who is this? And comes right up to you and sniffs you. However, I was telling somebody a couple of days ago that can be very dangerous for a monk, because I told the story so many years ago just how easy it is actually for monks to get into trouble these days. This was many years ago. Thank goodness it was a time before mobile phones and the cameras you have in the mobile phones. So everyone has a camera these days. So this was when I was teaching meditation in a prison down in Bunbury, maybe, was it 2 hours to the south of here. And the only way I can get down there, because we didn't have many, only one car and one driver, I would get the public transport, the Osterling train down to Bunbury, and have the afternoon free, and then I would teach in the evening. Anyway, one afternoon free, just, you know, beautiful autumn afternoon, walked on the beach, no one there. You know, I think it was a Tuesday or a Wednesday or something, so no one was on the beach at all, and it was lovely weather. So I walked a little while, then just sat down cross-legged to do some meditation on the deserted beach. My meditation's really good. After a couple of hours, I opened my eyes, and that's when my heart almost had a heart attack. Big trouble. 2 hours, I hadn't heard anything, because, you know, deep in meditation, you come out, and I look to my left, and there's this beautiful 17-year-old blonde in a bikini sitting on my left. And I'm... that's it. It's a crazy story. On my right, another 17... I knew it was 17-year-olds. I'll tell you why in a moment. A 17-year-old redhead, really nice, beautiful, long hair, also in a bikini. If anyone had taken a photograph of me, how could I explain that? Ajahn Brahm with his two girlfriends on the beach in an afternoon. But what had happened, it was in November, the very last day of the year 12 exams. You know, they used to call it TEE or TAE, whatever it's called. This is the last exam you do in high school. And on those results, you go to university or you go and get another job somewhere. And the last exam, the last day of school, they just finished. And the high school was right next to the beach, so everybody got into their bathers just to celebrate. I never knew that. I don't have kids. I don't know when the school year is. Except when I go to the monastery and it's really noisy. I thought it must be school holidays. And I never knew that, and because I was meditating, I didn't hear these girls creep up and just sit either side of me, and they said they were just really interested. They saw this guy, bald head, brown robe, sitting perfectly still, and they were fascinated. How can you do that? Sit so still. And they were really interested. Well, what is Buddhism anyway? What is this meditation? They were really sincere inquirers about the Dhamma. But nevertheless, even though I did make the conversation very short and got up and ran away pretty quickly before someone did take a photograph of me. Because totally innocent, but you know, sometimes that sort of happens. So anyway, I don't know how I got into saying that, but anyway, just to imagine just how peaceful you are, you're perfectly safe here. No one wears bikinis in Jhana Grove at this time of the year. So you're perfectly safe. So learning how to be still and peaceful, not wanting anything, and being very, very calm and compassionate. That is a way to find some peace in your life. Don't look at this retreat just the way you look at your work, striving and trying to get places. You've been there, you've done that, you're very good. That is, you've successfully enough to be able to pay for this retreat, be able to pay the airfares and get here. But now you're here, now's the time to stop. Stop. And see what happens. So anyway, that's just the 9 o'clock, a little introductory talk to give you a taste of what's coming next. The really detailed instructions start tomorrow morning with the 8 o'clock talk. So that's coming next. So those of you who haven't been on a meditation retreat before, a long one, you will get all the instructions, all the details, and also you'll have the opportunity to ask the questions. The evening session is usually the Q&A time, when you can put questions in the basket to make sure they're anonymous. You try and get people to put your hand up to ask a question, but they're always ashamed or embarrassed, or they just can't do it. But write on a piece of paper where it's supposed to be anonymous. People don't mind doing that. But I will tell you that at the end of the retreat, when you put in your feedback forms, that's where I get any interesting questions. I can compare the handwriting and thereby find out who it was who asked that naughty question. Now, it is anonymous, I don't do such things, although the opportunity is there, and a mind like mine can think of things like that. But anyway, don't matter. It is anonymous, so that's the evening. Any questions? And also that there will be opportunities for interviews as well. Usually, those who have been to these retreats before are usually the first day, which is Friday tomorrow. We usually don't have any interviews, but because I have to multitask in my position on Sunday, there is the Thai New Year, and I have an obligation to go and do some rites and rituals in our city centre on Sunday. So after the talk is finished, I go off into town, do those rituals, and then come back in the late afternoon. So that means on Sunday there won't be any interviews. So to make up for that, I'm doing an extra interview on Friday afternoon. Usually don't do it. So no interviews on Friday morning, but Friday afternoon there will be. And on Saturday, but Sunday, no interviews. Because I will not be here. You can interview yourself. You look in a mirror and talk to yourself, and how's my meditation going? This is called understanding things for yourself. In Pali, you call it Pachatang Vedutabo Vinyuhi, to be experienced every wise person for themselves. So anyway, that will be on Sunday. But the rest of the time, there will be the interviews for you. It is noble silence. So please, shh, don't talk to one another. A noble silence, that's for the whole of this compound. When you get into your cottages, it doesn't mean that the rule stops there. The rule extends into your cottage. It extends into your bedroom. So don't think that this place is exempt. Try and keep quiet. But noble silence, I have to say this every time, noble silence does not mean stupid silence. If you see a snake on the path, please say, there's a snake on the path. Don't try and mime it. Snake. I'm no good at miming. By the time people understand what I'm on about, the snake would have bitten you. So noble silence means if there is something to say, say it. But don't go into conversations. If the toast is burning, say, fire, fire. Don't just say, oh, let it go. I don't own this place, just let it burn down. Renounce. That is stupid silence. So when I said irresponsibility, don't take it that far, goodness sake. So, keep the noble silence as best you can, but people used to complain, when we say noble silence, A lot of times people feel so miserable and depressed that you can't sort of relate to anybody. So, noble silence, yes, but smile at one another. A little smile when you pass makes people feel that they're welcome, that they're accepted, they're not rejected. So please smile, that's compassion, but no need to break into speech unless it's really necessary. And you've heard all the other precepts which you need to keep. Again, if there's some reason why you really need to eat something in the afternoon, then you can go and ask Bianca and myself, and usually give permission. But all the biscuits which you put in your suitcases to bring here, all those other things you snuck. We should actually do like in the airport and have baggage searches. No, I don't mind because we're kind, compassionate, but try and keep things very simple. We're not trying to torture anybody. Just when there's nothing, no big meal in the evening, it's much more simple. It also is good for your tummy in the sense that you can have an empty stomach in the evening, so all the blood is not going down to the stomach, so it's up in the brain there, so you can be more aware, more mindful. When you eat, you actually do get sleepy. So that when you don't eat in the afternoon, you've got all this wonderful time where you can meditate and have a very empty stomach, all the blood up in your brain, doing fine. So try and keep the precepts as much as you can. And if you do make a mistake, you don't get kicked out. Sometimes I think I should do that, but no, just forgive yourself and just try and do better next time. It's all done on trust, on kindness, as best you possibly can. And have a lot of nice time meditating. There's lots of beautiful grounds here. You can go for walks. But I should say, the first few days anyway, sleep in. Because many people are tired when they first come on retreat. Been very busy. So, in the morning, we do have meditation. What time does it usually start? 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock or something? And chanting at 6, isn't it? Chanting at 6, yeah. But that is optional. You don't have to come for the chanting. So you can sleep in if you want to. And even the breakfast, that also is optional. You can miss that out if you wish. But you know, I've never seen anybody miss out the breakfast. Chanting, yes, but not the breakfast. If you had the breakfast at 4 a.m, you'd be up at 4 a.m. But that's just human nature. But look after yourself the first few days, because sometimes people decide they're not going to sleep very much and they use too much force and they get so tired. You see him in here nodding when they're supposed to be meditating. Total waste of time. So if you're tired, especially the first 2 or 3 days, go to bed. Any time of the day or night. So that you can have a nap. Catch up. And that means when I'm giving my talks, you don't find anybody just falling asleep. It's very dispiriting being a monk, putting all this effort into your talks and find people just falling asleep. So thank you for keeping awake tonight. Hopefully you'll keep awake later on. So now on that, good night everybody, and I'll see you in the morning. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Okay, have a nice night.